This is an interesting story. Jesus is invited to the house of a Pharisee, which might seem weird at first because the Pharisees are pretty regularly his opponents. They're the people trying to trap him. They're the people trying to get him. They're the people trying to trip him up. So why are they inviting him to his house? Well, I think it's important to note that sometimes we kind of paint this relationship that like of Jesus and the Pharisees that like all Pharisees are bad and out to get him and totally closed-minded at all times. When in reality, Jesus's theology probably related more, connected more with the Pharisees than it did the Sadducees. At face value, Jesus and the Pharisees aren't opponents. The Sadducees don't believe in an afterlife. And that's sad, you see. You remember this when you were kids? But the Pharisees, they believe in an afterlife, and that is fair, you see. And so Jesus and the Pharisees, they agreed on a lot of stuff. And, you know, we see Nicodemus is a Pharisee who kind of hears Jesus and he's like, hey, this guy's on to something. You see another Pharisee in Luke who goes and asks all the right questions and has some of the right answers. And Jesus says, hey, you're not far from the kingdom at all. We see Gamaliel in Acts who's kind of at least slightly sympathetic to the message and to the mission of Jesus's apostles. So not every single Pharisee was this evil, prideful dude. Some were at least open. And here we see, at first, a Pharisee who is open to Jesus being a prophet, being this next big guy, being this next messenger from God. And so Simon holds a banquet in Jesus' honor. He invites him over. It's not like one of these Pharisees setting a trap. He is legitimately having this nice, legit meal to honor Jesus. Now, maybe if he's like most Pharisees we know, again, we don't want to generalize them all, he's probably trying to get in good with this next big shot, this next prophet. He wants to be in good with him. Maybe he wants to be associated with him. Maybe he wants to be that guy. Oh, yeah, did you hear Simon? Yeah, he hosted him. Yeah, Simon and this next prophet, they're friends. They're good. You know, maybe even Simon wanted to have some kind of say in what Jesus was doing. But we'll see. Let's keep looking in the story before we make any judgments here. It's interesting, though. Jesus, he's known for eating with tax collectors and sinners. He's known for eating with the bad people. But here he's eating with a different kind of sinner. The holier-than-thou elite. The religious elite. The people who kind of turn their nose up at everybody else. The people who think that they have it all together. So he's kind of in the lion's den of sinners when he goes to this big Pharisee party at Simon's house. And really the stage is set for something pretty cool to happen, right? So this sinful woman walks in. Wink, wink. You know, we probably know what kind of sinful woman we're talking about here. She's the type, you might see someone like this on like South First. You know, low-cut skirt, maybe has a drug problem. That's the kind of woman we're talking about. You can tell from looking that she is a sinful woman. And she comes in loud in at this nice, ritzy, holier-than-their party. She comes in looking rough, crying, causing a scene. And Simon's thinking, oh, no. Oh, this is embarrassing. This is bad. Oh, what do I do? Oh, it looks like she's going towards Jesus. Oh, no, she's going towards Jesus. Don't touch. Oh, she's touching him. Oh, this is humiliating. My nice little ritzy party just got ruined by this woman. And then he's watching. He's like, oh, what's she going to do with that perfume? Please don't do what I think you're going to do. Oh, she's dumping it on his feet. Oh, no. This is so embarrassing. This is an awkward, inappropriate scene. This is like a scene from The Office. You kind of want to turn your head away, but you can't not watch as this whole thing unfolds. This lady just ruined this uppity party for all the rich, holy people. But Jesus, instead of being appalled, instead of bashing her and shaming Simon for letting this happen, because that's how this should have played out. If he was really a holy man, if he was really a prophet, he would have said, hey, Simon, why are you letting these people in here? You not have a doorman to keep embarrassing things like this from happening? But instead, he welcomes it. In a different, maybe a different occasion, maybe the same story, just a different take on it. There's some onlookers who are thinking, man, she just wasted all that perfume. What a waste of money. That's expensive. And I don't know, we don't know how she had it. We don't know how she had that money, maybe to buy that perfume. Maybe it was from an inheritance. Maybe business was really that good. We don't really know. But in our world, and the way we think about things, somebody would have said, hey, Jesus, do you know where that money came from for that perfume? I can't believe you're letting her do that. But Jesus and Paul really never played the game as where does our money come from? Where does this money come from? Because if you start trying to do that and only have money obtained by moral ways, you're in trouble. Just grow your own food. But what happens here that I think is shocking to them, that Jesus lets him do this, is he's letting this lady love him. Love lets people love you. I know that's really simple. I know that's a big duh, yeah, that's obvious. But we have a hard time with letting people bless us. We have a hard time with letting people serve us. Because real love isn't worried about reciprocity. Sometimes we don't want people to serve us because we're like, oh, well, I'm going to have to owe them a favor later. You know, Jesus wasn't like, oh, great, she's washing my feet. Now I'm going to have to wash her feet and it looks like she has a bunion. You know, he's not doing that. He's not keeping score here because love doesn't keep score. He's not thinking, oh, great, I can't ever afford this perfume. He's not worried about that. He's not worried about reciprocity. And often our feelings of reciprocity are more about pride. Sometimes pride keeps us from letting people love us, from letting people bless us, from letting people serve us. Because in our pride, we think, I'm here, and this person's here. And with me being higher than them, I'm the one who should be giving them the handouts. I'm the one who should be doing things for them. And if not, if they're doing things for me, then they're above me, and I just can't have that. In the pecking order, I have to be above people. And so it's another one of the reasons we're not very good at letting people love us and serve us and take care of us. So let people do that act of service. Let people buy that meal. Accept whatever they are trying to give you. It may be a couple weeks ago we talked about love languages. It may be one of their love languages. They may be trying to express to you that they love you. They may be trying to be affectionate towards you. And how rude and how hurtful to not accept someone's affection. It would be unkind to not accept someone's gesture of love. So one, ask yourself, do you ever refuse to accept someone's loving gestures? And second, you may need to kind of think about love languages and the way people are trying to serve you and communicate that they love you and that they care about you. Are people doing that and you're missing it just because it's not your love language, just because you don't get it? Like if you're not a hugger and someone keeps trying to hug you and you're like, well, I don't know why this person doesn't like me. It's like, maybe they do. They're just trying to show you in a way that doesn't always compute with you. So let people love you and then kind of think through, wait, are people showing me that they love me and I'm just missing it? I'm just not quite getting it. But Jesus allowing this woman to do this is where the Pharisee, Simon, who hosted, who I think at first thinks, this guy, he's a prophet. He's someone special. But when he sees Jesus let her do this, he starts thinking, I don't know, maybe this isn't the guy. A prophet, a holy man, would never allow this. He would have told this sinner to get out of his sight. He would have been way separate. And not only that, a holy man wouldn't become ceremonially unclean in this way. She's a sinner. She's unclean. And so by her touching him, it makes him unclean. You can't do that. But if you look at the whole of the gospel, and really even just a chapter earlier, you see Jesus is, he just goes on a spree of coming into contact with unclean things and touching unclean people. Just a few paragraphs earlier, he touches a coffin. So he's not worried about being ceremonially unclean. But that's one of the reasons Simon's like, oh, this guy, that should be really important. But we see over and over with Jesus that love is more important than these tedious laws. Love trumps law over and over and over again. And for some reason, we can't just like get that through our brains. And so knowing what this guy is thinking, Jesus knows what this Simon guy is thinking about him. Either miraculously, like he's got telepathy or something, or he's just good at picking up on social cues and can probably tell from looking at Simon and looking at the situation, he can kind of tell what this guy's thinking, that he's being pretty judgy. And so he tells this short parable, been called the parable of the two debtors. He says, two people owed a certain moneylender money. One owed him 500 denarii. 500 denarii is like the equivalent of like two years of work, which I'm not like an accountant, but I think usually that's maybe around what you should, whenever you're buying a house, you calculate out, you know, how much do you make in a year, and whatever your house is, it's a few years worth of pay. So it's almost like he owes him a house. And then the other guy, he only owes 50. But that's still like 2 months of work. It's a lot of work. It's still, they owe a lot. And neither of them can pay him back. One's got a much bigger debt, but neither of them can pay it back. And so the moneylender, he just forgives both, the 500 and the 50. And then he asks Simon, hey, Simon, which one is going to love the moneylender more? And it's pretty obvious, right? It's not a hard puzzle. It's not a riddle. The guy who owed 500 is going to love him more because his greater debt is forgiven. And so you can see it in this picture. The guy who was forgiven 50, he's like, okay, cool, I'm out. He walks off. Probably in a moment, I think we'll see that this is representative of Simon. Maybe some of us in here. And then the one who's been forgiven 500 is sitting there groveling and showing gratitude and showing love to the moneylender who's forgiven, which is symbolic of the woman in this story. So the more forgiveness you receive, the more loving you will be to the forgiver. Perhaps the more forgiveness you receive, the more grace you receive, the more you will show outwardly through humility and gratitude your love for this person who has blessed you so much, like this woman did. And so then he's speaking to Simon, but he turns to the woman. So he's speaking to Simon, but he's looking at the woman. He says, Simon, do you see this woman? Do you see this woman? Which everybody's probably, yeah, duh, yeah, we see her. She's causing a scene. She's making us all wildly uncomfortable. Why is she still here? Someone should kick her out. Yes, we see her. But what he means is, do you really see her? You really see who she, have you for a moment even tried to empathize with this woman as a human being? Have you thought about the life she's lived, the things she's suffered, the challenges she's faced, what her typical day looks like? Have you even thought for a moment what she is going through? Have you even tried for a moment to understand this woman? Have you looked at her as an actual human being? And he's saying it to Simon, but he's looking at her as if to say, I see you. I see who you are. I care about you. Jesus had this beautiful way of making people feel seen. Like with Zacchaeus, right? He's this guy who might just be getting picked on in this tree, but he calls him down by name. He's not just short stuff. He's Zacchaeus. Like when he's walking through the crowd, and there's a blind man calling out to him, and everyone's telling him to shut up, be quiet. But Jesus hears him. Jesus says, I hear you. And he goes and heals him. Or like when the woman touches him in the crowd, same thing. Everybody's touching you, Jesus. What are you talking about? No, there was a woman who touched me. I felt the power leave me. I care. So Jesus says, I see you. I know you. I know what you're dealing with. I care. One of the most loving things you can do, but also one of the most simplest things. It's making people feel seen. I notice you. I remember your name. I see what you're doing. I see the way you're raising these kids on your own. I see your struggle, and I see how strong you're being. Sometimes we don't do that. Maybe we need to be better at seeing people and letting people know that they are seen. We used to go to Camp Eagle, and one of the things that they train the counselors to do there is whenever you come within, I think it's 10 to 15 feet of someone, you have to acknowledge them. Even if it's, you know, something as small as like, hey, what's up? Just something to say, I see you and you exist. And for some people, they don't care, they don't need that. But for others, that's actually really important. I notice you. It's rude to just act like people aren't there. It's offensive. It's unkind. And so they're teaching people a simple kindness. You acknowledge people when they come by you. You let them know, I see you and you exist and you are a person and you have needs and I care about you. It's something so small, but something a lot of people weren't doing, but Jesus did, and that's something that made his ministry so powerful. So this morning, I want to challenge you to see people and let people know they are seen. We can also see in this story different ways Jesus and Simon viewed this woman. We see how Jesus viewed people The way Jesus viewed people determined how he would love them. So Simon looks at this woman's past, not her present. And that gives him moral leverage. For Simon, he can say, oh, she's a sinful woman, and that actually makes me feel good about who I am. I'm a good person. I'm not a sinner like her. I'm above her, and that feels really nice, and I don't want to do anything that would elevate her. So he only looks at her past, but Jesus can look at her present, and that helps him to be able to easily forgive the past because he sees who that person is now. Simon also has this view of righteousness that makes him see the lady as someone who he must distance himself from. To be righteous means to be away from the sinful people and the gross people and the people that aren't godly. To be righteous means to be away from them, to push them as far away as possible so we can be holier than thou. But Jesus shows us a different kind of righteousness. Jesus' righteousness moves towards people's brokenness, towards people's sin, and meets that with blessing. He doesn't move away from it. And I know for some of us that seems so counterintuitive, but you can see so many times in the Gospels that this is who Jesus is and this is who our God is. He doesn't move away from the brokenness, but towards it. And then I love this because, he's speaking to Simon, but he's looking at her and he's flattering her. He's validating her. He's praising her. He says, I came into your house, Simon. You didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered hasn't even stopped kissing my feet. You didn't put oil on my head, but she's poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. It wasn't forgiven because she did this. It says her many sins have been forgiven and her great love has shown that. We assume, and I think this is probably rightfully so, that she's actually reacting to an earlier encounter with Jesus. He likely encountered her earlier, maybe forgave her sins there, and now she's reacting in this way. And that implies, as her great love has shown, this is a reaction. But then he says, whoever has been forgiven little loves little. Whoever has been forgiven little loves little. It's interesting. He's saying all these nice things to this sinful woman who crashes the party. He's giving all this nice credit to this woman, the credit that Simon wanted. You know, Simon hosted this whole party so he could show he's in with the religious elite. He's in with this guy that people are saying is a prophet or the Messiah. Yeah, he wanted to say, hey, look, Simon and Jesus are friends. Simon and Jesus are cool. We're buddies. But then at the party, here Jesus is, saying, giving all the credit and all the praise to this sinful woman who crashes the party rather than Simon. How ironic. Just flipping everything on its head. Anybody who heard this story would have loved it. The poor people, the downtrodden, the broken, the people on the margins of society would love to be like, man, who's this Jesus guy? I heard at this party about how he validated this sinful woman. He gave her all the praise that this elite Pharisee wanted. What a wild change of events. And he's saying, hey, because her sins are forgiven, she has showed this humble outpouring of gratitude and love. And he's commending her for her love, not her faith, which I think is important. But Simon, on the other hand, in typical Pharisee fashion, he believes, maybe I've sinned once or twice, I've sinned. But mostly God should be grateful for having him because he's a really good religious person who follows the law really well. But here he is doing the bare minimum of hospitality for Jesus. A gratitude for the depths of God's forgiveness would have exhibited something like the sinful woman did, not the bare minimum that Simon puts forth. And so I want you to think about that. Are you just giving God the bare minimum? What must I do to be saved? How many times do I got to go to church? What do I got to do to get in the door? And that's what I want to do. And that's just good enough. I just don't want to go to hell, please. So what's the bare minimum here? What do I got to do? It's not really a healthy way of thinking about it. How many pieces of flair do you have to wear for Jesus? But it's a shame. Jared gets it. But it's a shame when we think about it in this way. Because then it's not about love. But what must I do to get in? But this woman, she knew she was already in. She was already in with Jesus. And she was so grateful for that, that now she does this outpouring of love. So this woman who has grasped the depth of God's forgiveness and his love shows this great outpouring. So if you're here this morning and you want to grasp the depth of God's forgiveness as well, if you want to be embraced by his love, if you're ready to give your life to him, we invite you to come now as together we stand and sing.